Welcome to the Connections Podcast, a podcast devoted to how Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo connect to our beloved community. I'm Jack Brennan, Connections at UUSM. Today's podcast is brought to you by Open Circles. You'll never find a deeper connection with individuals at UUSM than you will find in covenant groups of deep listening that we call Open Circles or Aging to Saging groups. Our guest today is Lillian Barton. Lillian was born in New York City in 1936. She moved to the Bronx in 1940. After her parents divorced when she was seven, she was raised as a Catholic and attended Catholic school until high school, when she refused to keep going to Catholic school and switched to a public high school with 4,000 students. In 1959, she got married and moved to Southern California. She had three kids and sent them to CCD in the Catholic Church, but pretty much gave up religion for herself. In 1981, she divorced and moved to Northern California, settling in San Mateo. She circled the bay, living in San Mateo, Oakland, San Francisco, Marin, and now in Woodlake with her daughter. Lillian got her BA in English Literature at Cal State Fullerton in 1966, her MBA at Pepperdine in 1980, her PhD in Business at Golden Gate University in 1989, and her MFA in Writing, which she got in 2002 after she retired. She worked mostly in accounting and finance until she started teaching full-time, retiring as department chair and professor of business at Notre Dame de Namur University in Belmont. Lillian has self-published two memoirs. She's volunteered and been active with the Peninsula Conflict Resolution Center for the past 20 years or so. She's been a member of UUSM since the 1990s. Gordon, Lillian's significant other for 18 years, died in 2002. He was a retired Army colonel. They did a lot of traveling, mostly in Europe, and they got as far as Russia. Her three grown children are Daniel, who is a professor and chair of the English department at Butler University in Indianapolis, Chris, who runs a major dog rescue facility in Beijing, China, and her daughter, Alice, who is an actor, as well as a caregiver to her mother. Lillian, welcome to the Connections Podcast. I've been hoping to have you on the podcast for a while, and I thank you so much for saying yes. I do have a few questions for you about your biography. You mentioned that your parents divorced when you were seven. Divorce, of course, was much less common in the 1940s than it is today. After the divorce, did you still have a robust relationship with your father?
No, I had no relationship at all with my father. I think I've seen him after that. I saw him about three times in my life.
Wow.
Yeah, it was rough being from a broken home.
Right. That's what they used to call it.
That's what they used to call it.
That's right.
But, you know. We managed. Yeah. We managed.
And so you were not raised as a Catholic before the divorce, but you were after? Is that how that happened?
Yeah, my mother was a little diggy, I should say. After the divorce, she decided that one of the reasons was she'd let her religion go. But she didn't go back to the Catholic Church. She decided sending us back was enough. I went to Catholic elementary school, but I didn't want to go to high school there.
Why was that?
Well, it was a time when those kinds of things were not really approved of. You know, somehow you did something wrong. And I had gotten to the point where Catholicism did well. My mother sent us to Catholic school, and I went through eighth grade, but I couldn't rationalize the belief that God knew everything, past, present, and future, with the concept that we had free will. They seemed to be in direct competition with each other. And a lot of it seemed unfair, and I just didn't want to be part of it any longer. It was rough. It was rough. Well, my mother was, as I said, she was a little bit strange. So,
was it a tough transition to such a big high school?
I loved it. I loved it. I wasn't unique. I wasn't the only one from a broken home. And we had such a variety of teachers and facilities and things to do that it was like the world had opened up to me. I really loved it. I felt bad when it closed down. It was one of the biggest ones in the city.
Nice. You got married in 1959. And then you moved. What caused the move to Southern California? And how did you feel about that, like, even before you moved, that you were moving to this foreign place?
That was another escape for me.
Ah.
And I wonder if I would have gotten married if we hadn't been moving to Southern California.
Oh, really?
My husband was a builder.
Okay.
He was a carpenter and a builder. It was a place that was booming with construction.
Sure.
So it was a much better situation for him. And coming from New York City, the weather and the ambiance in Southern California was just great fun. You know, I didn't realize until after I'd had my kids that Southern California was Orange County and it was a little restrictive. But I liked it. I liked the weather. I liked the people. Yeah. You know, so.
So you stayed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got your BA in English Lit in 1966. So that was like 7 years after you got to California?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I tell people it took me 12 years to get a bachelor's degree. And
tell
then
me about
12
that.
Years to get everything else, you know. Right. I started out at Queens College in New York after I finished high school. And I went a year full time. And then my mother said, sorry, you have to go to work and help out. Mm-hmm. So I did that. I went to Hunter College for a while. And then after I got married, when we came to California, I went to Cal State Fullerton, which at that time, we used to say three Quonset huts in a bean field. Because it had just broken ground, you know. It was close to where I was living. So I got my bachelor's there finally. I also got a teaching credential, which I actually never really used. By the time I could use it, I realized I was pregnant with my third child.
What year did you have your first child?
Let's see, I got married in 59. Dan was born in 1960. So
60, okay. And
Alice was born in 62, and Chris came along in 67. Life did not turn out exactly as I had planned.
Life has a way of doing that. Okay, so after your divorce in 1981, which we're kind of skipping some decades there.
But, yeah, right.
But you stayed in California, but you moved to the Bay Area. Was there a particular reason that you chose San Mateo?
I had decided, I'd finished my MBA in Southern California, and I had decided that I wanted to work in an academic environment.
Mm-hmm.
It was where I was the happiest. And my son was going to Berkeley. So it looked like the Bay Area. And I called every college in the Bay Area and applied for jobs.
Wow.
And I finally got one at Golden Gate. I ran their accounting department for a while. So
interesting.
But I liked the Bay Area. I realized that after as many years as I was in California, that living in New York was not going to be a possibility. It would require more money than I had, and the weather was not helpful. And I liked the Bay Area. I liked it better than Southern California. I made a lot of good friends here. Mm. Yeah.
First, you worked mostly in accounting and finance. What kinds of jobs did you have?
That was an interesting one. Let's see, I was head bookkeeper. I was director of finance. Finance and accounting is one of those things, unless you get a CPA, which is your official credential, you could be called just about anything. Mm-hmm. I did all the accounting. I learned how to do accounting by taking care of my husband's books. Then I worked for a couple of construction companies. And eventually, when I came to Northern California, I worked at Golden Gate and ran their accounting department. And that was a good move for me because I was able to get my PhD without paying for it.
Nice.
And I also started teaching while I was working there.
Right. You started teaching. Did you always teach on the college level?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I always taught adult students. Mm-hmm. I didn't teach in the daytime. I always taught at night, which was very interesting and became an area that I really loved. I loved working with the adult student because I learned that if you walk into a classroom and you see a group of students, it doesn't matter what age they are. They all feel like they're in the fourth grade. They all have that sense of, am I okay? Will I learn enough? It was always interesting and fascinating for me to work with that population because many of them had very important jobs and had never finished their degrees. Mm. They felt uncomfortable about that. A degree was something important.
Right.
And I learned they were good students for the most part. There's always a couple of flakes.
What did you love most about teaching?
I love there is a sense of wonder when a student discovers they know something. And all of a sudden, I had an accounting student one time, and she had a hell of a time figuring out the difference between a debit and a credit. It was like, you know, her life depended on it. And I remember the day she came running into my office and she said, I've got it. I've got it. And it was like the heavens had opened for her. I still have a little crystal apple that she gave me at graduation. It was that, you know, sense of wonder. It was so much fun to see.
Yeah.
You know.
And what was the most challenging part?
Convincing the students that they could make a difference. That, I don't know. There was always that one or two students who thought that somebody should hand them a degree. And they didn't have to work very hard for it. But I had a couple of nasty encounters, but for the most part, I taught for 20 years, and I think I loved every minute of it. I really felt as though I was making a difference.
Right.
That in understanding how business worked, the students began to understand how it didn't work.
Right.
How it needed to be fixed. Yeah. So I like that.
What did you do as a volunteer with the Peninsula
Conflict Resolution Center?
Right.
PCRC is what we used to call
PCRC.
It.
PCRC. Okay.
But I took their training to do mediation. I thought that would be a good skill set for me as a teacher, and it was. It was fascinating, though. We did neighbor to neighbor, we did landlord tenant, et cetera. And it was a methodology, it was very specific methodology, and you went through the steps. And it was amazing that most of the time it worked.
Right.
You know, you thought these two people are never going to learn how to talk to each other. And somehow or other, something would happen because of the process. And they would. And they'd fix it. And they'd come up with the most cockamamie solutions you ever would want to hear. I mean, they wouldn't stand up in court or anything else.
You were the mediator.
Yeah, usually there were three of us doing it.
Okay.
I loved it. I also took the training in facilitation, and that's been something I have done fairly regularly.
Right.
Right now, I'm facilitating Aging Disaging Group for UUSM. I'm also facilitating a community group for the Peninsula Family Services, where the objective is to provide community for the elderly who can't get out of the house, whatnot, can meet once a week and talk to each other and have fun.
Wonderful. So. What a great idea. I am a big believer in your mediation work. My first time in a mediation, I sued a school district and we went to mediation and I thought, there's no way, we're just, you know, like you said, we're just way too far apart. At the mediation, the mediator came in and he asked me for my list of things we wanted, and I had 13 things, and he took it to the other side, and then he came back and he said, well, on number one, they said no. On number two, they said no. And he went down the whole list and they said no to everything, which wasn't a surprise. But at the end, as I'm starting to put my stuff in my bag, he says, and I believe we'll reach an agreement today. And we did. And boy, ever since that day, I've been such a big believer in mediation. And you're right, you can do all kinds of things in mediation that you couldn't do anywhere else. How did you end up at UUSM in the 1990s?
Well, I was living in Northern California, and I was actually feeling a little bit lonely because I had moved quite a number of times. So I had friends in various and sundry places. So I thought, well, let me look at a church, you know, let's see. And I turned up at UUSM one Sunday, and Joy Atkinson was the minister, and she gave a sermon on the universe. She was a great fan of astronomy and that sort of thing. And I remember sitting there and saying to myself, if I can go to a church with a woman minister who believes in the universe and doesn't tell me how to believe, and I think I can hang out. And I did. The very first class I took at the church was something called Cakes for the Queen of Heaven. And it was a feminist group. And there were two men in the feminist group. And I thought, okay, I can do this. And I got pretty active, you know, so it was a good place for me, and it's still a very good place for me. I've made some wonderful friends. Unfortunately, I've lost a number of them too.
Yes.
So
yes.
That's been hard.
Was there a moment in which you realized, oh, I belong here? Was it that first day?
It was that first day with Joy, and the longer I stayed, the more I realized that no one was going to require me to believe in something that didn't make sense to me. And I remember somebody saying to me, it's the only place you go where if you change what you believe, you don't have to change your church. That always kind of stuck with me, because I think the heart of UUSM is community.
Definitely.
Not creed. We've got to stop telling people what they believe. Gotta let them figure it out for themselves.
I know that you've had a lot of roles at UUSM, and you still do. As you mentioned, you still facilitate an aging disaging group. What do you enjoy about that facilitation?
Well, I find that the folks at UUSM are bright, they're smart, they're funny, they're open, and They send me jokes.
You love to laugh. I know that about you.
I do. I do. It's the one thing that I think we don't ever get enough of.
Right.
And it's hard when you're living alone to find things to laugh at.
I only know you, Lillian, on Zoom. You know? So it makes me think I should probably ask this question. Tell me how the pandemic affected your
life.
Well,
yeah. I couldn't go to church, not just the pandemic, but I have COPD, mm-hmm. so I am at risk. So I had to be very careful.
Right.
And my daughter moved in with me, and I went through a bad patch. I got pneumonia. I was hospitalized for about a week. Mm-hmm. I'm still having some back and weakness problems. So I'm kind of a candidate for the pandemic.
Right.
And so I've learned how to use Zoom. I have my own account, and it's been a lifesaver for me.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of the people I work with.
Yeah.
I have a group with PFS that meets on Tuesday mornings at 11. And half of them would not have anybody to talk to if it weren't for the Zoom, I fully admit. It's not the ideal. It's not the ideal. But I think it has made a difference in many people's lives. I go to church on Zoom.
Yeah.
I will look forward to, yeah, in fact, we were talking yesterday. I look forward to going back to church.
Yeah.
And hope that that is something that I'll be able to do in a couple of months.
I sure hope so.
Have our meetings there and do stuff there, you know.
Yeah.
But getting older is, let's see, some days I feel it's an adventure. And some days I feel it's a trial. I'm 86. And I'm not sure I had a blueprint for this time in my life. And I wish I knew more about what's up, what's coming down the pike. So
you don't have a crystal ball?
I don't have a crystal ball.
All right. Well, I have some quick hitters for you. I'm going to ask you a quick question. You give me an answer. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. What's the best sandwich?
Pastrami on rye.
Okay, and what else goes on that pastrami on rye? Mustard?
Mustard, lettuce, and a little bit of an onion. It's always good.
Okay. That sounds like a pretty good sandwich.
Yeah.
What's the best advice you ever got?
I think when I was first teaching, I wasn't sure what I was doing. And I had a couple of teachers that were a mentor. And one of them said to me, Lillian, if in doubt, just listen. And it got so that I would, particularly in the mediations in that, I would put a little sign up that I could see and it would say, listen. And it has stood me well.
That's great. What kinds of things keep you up at night?
Global warming, money, I don't know, just what's next?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Where will I wind up? You know? I mean, I believe that this is the end of the line, but I'm willing to be surprised.
I love that. What's your strategy for getting back to sleep when those things keep you up at night?
Sleep late in the morning.
Okay. What's your best way to get the news?
I get the New York Times online, and I generally will check that early in the morning to make sure that nothing is happened that I have to worry about, but that's pretty much it. I listen to PBS at night.
Mm-hmm. What are you reading right now?
Oh, I'm rereading
Okay.
the series of Louise Penny's books.
Oh, yeah.
With Gamache. I think that's the way you say his name.
Oh,
But
nice.
it's been long enough since I originally read them that I don't remember them, so I'm having fun rereading them.
If you had to live in another country, which country would you pick?
Actually, I think I'd pick New Zealand.
Huh. Wow, that's far away. Why New Zealand?
Yeah, I think I like their take on politics. It's a reasonably small country. They seem to have a lot of women running the show. And it's a very pretty place. I have a niece who lives there, and she sends me pictures. So,
What's the best nighttime snack?
Oreos.
Oreos. Yes. Thank you. Oh, that's good. Who was the first person you voted for in a US presidential election?
I'm sure it was JFK. He was my generation. His little boy was the same age as one of mine, and I thought he was going to save us all.
What's your favorite local charity?
Oh dear, I should say UUSM, but actually it's probably the Peninsula Conflict Resolution Center. I think that they've probably contributed more to peace than many others I know.
What an interesting way to think of that. That's true. That's true. What's the best religion?
Kindness.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Well, I truly believe that. I think that we're a little bit short on that right now. If we all got credit for being kind, it'd be a different world.
It
But
would. It would indeed. Thank you so much, Lillian. I have enjoyed every second of our conversation. This was so interesting. I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with me, and I hope that we get to have another conversation soon because you're a
yes.
person I love to talk to. You have the best stories. So thank you. And thanks to our listeners. Keep making connections.